The San Jose Sharks Audio Network is on 24 hours a day. Whether you're in the office or on the go, make sure that you download the Sharks SAP Center app and hit listen anytime. You can also find us on your computer by going to sjsharks.com/listen. If it's a game broadcast, breaking news, or a player feature, the place to find it is right here on the San Jose Sharks Audio Network.
We're getting you ready for the game on The Buildup with news from around the league, interviews, highlights, and more. Here's your host, Ted Ramey.
All right, what's happening, everybody? You are on The Buildup as we get you ready for tonight's game between your San Jose Sharks and the Anaheim Ducks. It is April 1st. We are in the final 2.5 weeks of the season. It is Anaheim tonight, and then we're back home for three on Thursday, Edmonton, Seattle, and then Calgary. Then on the road for four, we've got Minnesota, Edmonton, Calgary, and then Vancouver. And then you end the year with Edmonton at home. So we've still got a lot of hockey left to see with the San Jose Sharks. I am very hopeful that they will continue to push strong towards the end of the year and prove that those last two games were a bit of an aberration. But to talk about all things going on with the San Jose Sharks, we are now joined by Max Miller, who covers the Sharks for NHL.com. Max, what's going on, man? How are you doing?
Hey, Ted. How are you? I'm good. Good. Nice, thanks for having me.
No, of course. I enjoyed our last visit, and I figure we've got a lot to talk about. I'm going to throw my stat at you that I have been throwing at people the last couple of days. Games in which Cam Lund scores, the Sharks are outscored 14-2 on aggregate. are we making anything of that?
I think we should get rid of Cam Lund. No. Good for Cam Lund. Shows he's playing hard. Just tough break for the two games that he scored in.
No, most definitely. And he hasn't really celebrated on either of them, which I understand when you're in a game. And it was 2-0 when he scored, but still no celebration. But what have you thought of his game so far? Because I don't know if you noticed this, but the goals that he scored were very similar. It was him aggressively moving forward towards the net and just being at the right place in the right time. And I think that's one of those things that tells you a lot about his vision overall.
Yeah, exactly. I think he sees the ice really well. He's really smart. He uses his body well. Like you mentioned, he puts his body in a good position to have the puck come to him or be near him. The one thing I noticed with him is he's got really good puck skills, and he doesn't have that rookie of, oh God, I got to get rid of it type feel to his game. He does sometimes. It's still there. He's just trying to make a play, but he's not afraid to move the puck and take a second turn away from along the boards. He's using his body really well along the boards and in front of the net. And his puck skills are a little better than I thought. The puck is kind of magnetic to his blade. It kind of seems to find him, and he doesn't too often. It doesn't fumble it and have it roll over his blade or anything like that.
No, it is interesting to watch kind of the calmness to his game that we've seen so far, and you compare that to other rookies. I think, you know, early on, Will Smith this year was not overwhelmed by the moment, but you could tell he was adjusting. He had a different adjustment period than a Macklin Celebrini. And I think because it's a similar situation, we probably compare it to that of Colin Graf a year ago when he came in at the end. Do you imagine the next year Cam Lund will be in a similar situation where he starts off with the Barracuda and proves himself all of Colin Graf? Or do you think that he'll have an opportunity to start off with the first team?
I think it'll be more so like the Colin Graf route, but I definitely think the way Ryan Rosofsky coaches the team and the way he runs his roster is anybody can make the roster at any time. You just have to prove it to me. And in order for that to happen, Cam Lund's got to have a really big camp. I mean, they're going to have a lot of players to come in, and it's going to be a big competition, and who knows what they do in the offseason. But, you know, he's making a good first impression.
Have you started thinking at all about what the Sharks might do in this offseason? I know everybody was, getting all sorts of excited about the quote-unquote family picture that included one Mitch Marner, which, you know, I have no idea what is going to happen there and what Mitch wants to do. But, I mean, I feel like one way or another, the Sharks have to spend money. After the deadline, they were 20 underneath the floor for next year. So they are going to have to bring in, you know, players one way or another. And then the other part of that, Max, is that I just wonder about Mike Greer thinking, we can't keep on having our guys get beat up like this, losing 6-1, losing 8-1. I know we can talk about some of the things that the team did wrong in those situations, but you have a collection of talent on the other side of the deadline that is not as talented as it was before, which was already at a lower level of talent compared to the rest of the league. And it's just not good for anyone to get smashed the way the Sharks have the last few years.
Yeah, no, it's not good. I mean, I've definitely looked into it. I mean, I see the potential for Mitch Marner. You mentioned the cap space that the team has. I mean, they're gonna have like just over 40 million in cap space. They're gonna have a lot of money to spend. It could be a similar John Tavares situation when he was a free agent, where the Sharks kind of gave him the richest in terms of dollar amount offer. Would Mitch Marner take it? Who knows? The other question is, will Mitch Marner even get to market? Who knows? He clearly wants to stay in Toronto. We saw that with the Rantanen trade and him rejecting a trade to go to Carolina because he wants to stay in Toronto. But a couple other guys that I'm looking at, Brock Besser's a free agent. We know he's solid and he's due for a pay raise. But the guy I'm really excited about that I feel like the Sharks should kind of chase maybe in a 5 or 6 year deal is Winnipeg Jets Nikolaj Ehlers. That guy is electric. He's fast. He can shoot. He's got some offense. He'll play in your top six. On some nights he can carry a team, but he's not a McDavid or Draisaitl level, but he's a top talent in the NHL that I think is, I guess, discount stardom, who's due for a pay raise. But with the Sharks, cap space and he's only, he's 29. Like, he's not terribly old. You don't want it, maybe not an 8, 7 year deal, but he clearly can skate and play offense for the Jets. He's been a solid player. He's just got to stay a little bit healthier.
It's interesting to look back at the overall free agent history of the San Jose Sharks. Most of the names have come in trades. If we want to talk about Jumbo, if we want to talk about a Brent Burns, and we talk about Evander Kane, we go down the list. The stars that have been here have either been homegrown or trade acquired. But the one thing is that if they come to San Jose, they stay in San Jose. It's like there's this weird perception that they don't quite understand it once they get here, and then once they get here, they never want to leave.
Yeah, I think the only holdback that I've had with conversations with people in that world, or the agents world, is just the taxes. But other than that, the area is nice, the arena is nice, the community is nice. The attention that the market is starting to get because of guys like Celebrini and Smith, I think, is exciting that people want to go to. And you have all these people around, and you look at the team, and they're a dead last again, but they're having a ton of fun. Like, that should mean something. So how could this team be feeling and acting when they're good? That's exciting to think about for anybody that is debating coming to San Jose as a free agent or not.
The one thing I look at is whether or not players view San Jose as being maybe as close as some of us here in the Bay Area would view them, because you see a team that's at the bottom of the standings and you're like, well, they're a long way off. But I think those of us that are a bit closer think, well, there's been a lot of third period losses. They traded away their number one goalie in December, which I think had a relative demoralization on the team. And that when you have these young talents like a Celebrini and a Will Smith, plus established guys like a Tyler Toffoli, like it's not that hard to see a couple of moves making this team closer to being in the conversation a year from now, and then 2 and 3 years from now, you don't know where they would be. Does that sell to free agents? Do they think like, yeah, there is something pretty fun cooking in San Jose that I want to be a part of?
Case in point is Tyler Toffoli. Like, that he said that outright. He said that, he sees the vision here. And at what is he? I think he's 33 years, he's on the wrong, quote unquote, wrong side of 30, but he's still producing, obviously. But he sees the vision here. Part of the pull here was to mentor that and get back to a chance. He feels that this is a place where he can kind of have some stability in terms of term, which is something he wanted because he'd been traded the last few years, and as well as get back to the playoffs quickly. Because a lot of times, if he were to sign somewhere, at that age, and the similar deal that he did, he may only get one or two cracks at it. He may get three or four cracks at it and then sign for a lower value after this contract ends, as this team continues to go on playoff runs for a longer period of time. So if you're on maybe not, Toffoli's age or like similar to Nikolaj Ehlers, like, there's a pathway here to success. It just needs to be done right, and guys want to be part of that. The other part of that is that you have to think about when pitching to these free agents is what's their role going to be. Part of the way that you're going to be able to sign them is guaranteeing them top roles and not having young players take over those spots. Because then you have buyer's remorse, which is something my career is wanting to avoid when you're paying a third liner $8 million per year. That's not something you're looking to do.
Is it the worst thing in the world if the Sharks pass the Blackhawks in the standings by the time the year is done? I mean, I don't know if they will, but they've cut it down to 2 points, and I could see the Sharks eventually passing them. One way or another, Max, they're gonna end up with a top three pick and have a real stud to select from. But do you think it's still in their best interest to have the greatest odds to get the number one pick?
I think it, from a fun perspective, the hope in me is that they pass the Blackhawks and maybe don't win the lottery, and maybe a team that can't move up past number two or one in the lottery wins the lottery and they stay at like two or something, and they technically don't win the lottery, so they, could finish seventh or eighth worst next year and still win the lottery and get Gavin McKenna next year. But I don't think that happens either. That's a pipe dream for me, Ted. But I don't think it's a bad thing. I think you have your core piece. I think with Misa and Schaefer, like, I think you're just taking best available because Misa is such an offensive talent. Like, it's hard to ignore and contemplate taking him first overall, whereas the Sharks maybe could use, in terms of a positional value, a Matthew Schaefer more on defense. But I don't know if finishing first or second makes a total difference. Would it be nice to have number one so you could have your pick of the litter? Probably, but I don't know how much. It's hard to tell and make that decision without knowing what Mike Greer is thinking for the draft. Because if he has his eyes set on a guy, you're going to want number one because you don't want to risk losing that pick at number one when you're sitting at number two.
Let's do a little bit of the Misa Schaefer debate, and you alluded to it by saying they're maybe a little bit more at need with D, but I mean it's hard to argue against either of them because I see a lot of talent clearly with both. How do you think Mike Greer is viewing it, and what's your view on it?
Yeah, I think it's tough because the problem is with Schaefer, it's so hard to know where he's at. His draft year derailed by the clavicle injury. I mean, he's practicing now. He's trying to get proof of contact for the playoffs against Saginaw, against Michael Misa in the OHL, ironically, and Igor Chernyshov. But it's hard to tell. He's clearly, I think if he was healthy, I think he might have separated himself a little bit as a clear number one. But Misa has also had a terrific second, like, entire year, but especially second half after not being invited to Canada's even World Junior selection camp, which baffles me because nobody's put up offensive numbers in the OHL like him, I think, like, ever. So it's hard because do you project Macklin Celebrini to be that level of offensive talent? Maybe not 120 points, but maybe 90 to 100 points is similar to Jack Eichel production, where if he has a career year, he'll put up 45 goals and, 60 assists. He'll have 105 to 110 points. Misa could be closer to a Kucherov type level score, maybe not the 130 or whatever points got, but like 115 to 120 points, and just be that go-to scorer guy and allow Macklin to dominate 200 feet of the ice. But then again, you also have Leon Draisaitl, who dominates 200 feet of the ice and is going to win a Rocket Richard, similar to Sidney Crosby when he did in his prime. So it's tough because defense is a need, but without that draft stock film, it's really hard to figure out who you want, and you're gonna have to do it based off interviews and past film.
If we look at, the beyond the first round, do you expect to see Greer maybe lean a little bit more towards defensive needs, or is it just, do you think it's always best available with him?
I think a little bit. I think especially in the first round, I think it's a little bit more positional needs. But at the same time, we haven't really been in this spot where it's like, okay, what's the, because they've just kind of needed everything. So I think this will be the first glance. I think Greer has operated on the best available, at least publicly, but I wouldn't be surprised if he kind of goes value for positional need if he's picking that high. Now, if for some reason they drop, they pass the Blackhawks and they drop to four, who knows what they're going to do? Higgins could still be on the board. So I definitely think it's going to be a little bit of balancing act. I think Greer will lean positionally, but it all goes back to you can't ignore Mises' talent as a number one overall pick.
This gets us into the conversation of not all of these prospects that the Sharks have or will have are going to make it to Team Teal. Are you expecting trades to be part of this offseason for San Jose? Or maybe not expecting, but are you wondering about that? Because it's something that keeps on floating through my head. Even the teams that have been really great at turning the wheel of prospects, like we looked at Boston, for instance, they've been really good at keeping that wheel churning. There still have been trades along the way. And I'm not going to be surprised if that does happen with San Jose.
Yeah, I'm with you there. I mean, the whole point of why Greer made some of the trades he did, like the Granlund one, was to get a second first round pick as trade capital, from what it sounds like. That's what he made it sound like. When you look at what the Sharks have and how well they've made trades over the last, little bit, maybe not the Zetterlund trade yet, who knows with that. But like, they have capital to be somewhat buyers. Wouldn't be surprised if there may be a buyer in the dead at the draft again, maybe package something, one of these prospects in a first round pick that, is good, like a B plus prospect, and the later first round pick, and try and move up to maybe back into the top 20, because that Dallas pick is going to be, top 25, at least we think so. And that's something that I could see the Sharks doing in the draft. I could also see them maybe there's a disgruntled prospect somewhere that had a high pick, or they're high on somebody that's, in the 18, 19, 21 range that maybe isn't getting a chance and they're just not winning. Like a, I don't know, like the Rangers have a lot of prospects there too. You could look at Washington and their setup now, and they're getting Ryan Leonard. So there's a whole bunch of avenues Mike Greer could go to, but I think that second first round pick could be a weapon for Mike Greer to use for more trades.
What do you think has been going on with these last couple of games for San Jose, considering how competitive they've been since the break, other than that Colorado game? And then suddenly you get two blowout losses back to back. And yes, the fact that they were back to back games with no rest may have had something to do with it on the second end, but it's not been what we've expecting lately from the team.
Yeah, it's I think it's a bit of immaturity. That's what, head coach Ryan Roslovsky said this morning as well. It's something that I think this team is learning how to do. They get pretty high, and then they when they get low and they drop low, and I think it's just they gotta, you can't get too high. I mean, they had two great wins over two really good teams. And that kind of just now they feel like, okay, we know what we're doing. We can win games now. You can't get comfortable. And I think part of it is immaturity. And I think part of it is the Rangers were a desperate team. And I'm going to be honest, I was a little surprised at the Rangers' effort. That's not something they've shown a lot this season, but
No.
maybe it's a trend to come. The Kings came off a very tough game against Toronto, which they thought they had, and their coach has drilled them to be competitive in every game. Their power play is slowly waking up. I know in the overall scheme of things, it's not great, but the last 10 or so, it's over 20%, and the Sharks just got it there. The Kings are playing hard and they want the home ice advantage against the Oilers because that's probably what's going to happen because that's what always happens. And that team works. And that's what I think Ryan Rostowski is trying to build is what the Kings did to the Sharks. Doesn't matter who you're playing. You could play Toronto one night. They didn't take a second off. They played Toronto hard and the next night they could have easily gone, oh, it's the Sharks. We don't have to play hard. And they
Right.
stayed detailed and blew them out. That's what I think the Sharks are working towards. They just don't have that experience or maturity yet.
When you watch some of the ways that the Sharks have changed and tightened up since the Four Nations break, what have you seen? Because obviously they've been in tight games overall from the first game of the year, literally losing in overtime. But honestly, watching them since the break, they do have tighter coverages. They're better in all three zones. It just looks like a tighter team. I mean, is that just what the difference that practice can make? Or do you think that the tactical adjustments that Ryan Warsawski has made have allowed the Sharks to be, for the most part, not counting these last two games, that much more, high quality a team or a little bit more competitive?
I think it's a little bit of both. I think they've learned. I mean, you're in the NHL, you're going to learn how to play, you're going to win games. But I definitely think there was a tactical change after the Four Nations of just giving more support along the boards and having closer support and instead of trying to run as free. I think Warsawski realized this team needs a little bit more structure and he's giving them that and they're feeding off it very, very well. So I think it's a little bit of both. The team is learning and when that structure breaks down like it did against the Rangers and against the Kings, and the biggest one for me is I think it was Fogle's first goal, whoever got behind, or no, Trevor Moore's goal, when he got behind the defense, it was kind of like, how did he get there? It was just guys were a little late on their support. So that detail
Yeah.
oriented, when that breaks down and miscommunication, you see the struggles. And so I think it's, a mixture of both, but the structure, more structure, I should say, has definitely, I think, helped. And we've seen that on the ice right away.
We've watched Lane Hutson pull into the lead for the Calder race. I've never been overly concerned with this. I know it's more of what fans are hoping for, just because you want something to celebrate at the end of a rough year for a team, and it's been a rough era for San Jose as they've been in this rebuild. I guess, are you looking at it that unless Macklin goes on a tear, he's probably not going to win it?
Yeah, I think for a while he was kind of keeping Hudson and even Michkov at arm's length. But this last little push, especially Michkov and really Hudson here, I think you look back to the start of the year, you add 12 games of Macklin Celebrini, that's what, another 10 to 12 points.
Yeah.
I think that you could stave it off just a little bit. But I think now you're looking back and you're like, oh, that injury, I think, hurt his chances. Do I think he could still win? Sure. But he needs to have a strong final 2 to 3 weeks here, and it needs to be a real strong one. Could we see it? By all means. I think he finishes second right now. I think it goes Hudson one, Celebrini second, and either Wolf or Michkov third. And then whoever one of those isn't third is going to go fourth, and I think Smith will be fifth. And I'll just say this. Connor McDavid didn't win the Calder Trophy because he hurt his arm. Shane Gostisbehere did. I think Macklin Celebrini not winning the Calder, if he doesn't, will be just fine.
Hear more of that interview tomorrow morning on Morning Tide right here on the Sharks Audio Network. We are just about out of time. But remember, we are a go time at 7 o'clock tonight, pregame 6:30. Dan Ruzanowski and Scott Hannon with the call right here on the Sharks Audio Network. I will be on NBC with my good friend Alan Hoshida. We, of course, are starting at 6:30 as well. For the San Jose Sharks, I'm Ted Ramey, signing off.
This podcast can be found on demand anytime on the Sharks Plus SAP Center app. All music by Yogi Yend.